Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
Try he is. Munson hits it high, hits it well to left. Wilson going way back, way back. It is.
Oh! The damage man. You're getting everything, ladies and gentlemen.
Yankees great Thurman Munson was one of the best catchers in the game when he died in a stunning plane crash at age 32 in 1979. One of Munson's closest friends and teammates was Ron Bloomberg from their time in spring training, the clubhouse, and their adventures off the field. Bloomberg was the first designated hitter in Major League history and the author of a memoir called Designated Hebrew. His new book is called The Captain and Me, On and Off the Field with Thurman Munson. Boomer, welcome to the Roundtable.
Ian, it's so great to be able to talk to you and talk about my book, and also I've heard so much about you, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure. What got you thinking about your time with Thurman Munson, and why did you want to write this book now?
Well, Ian, I thought about it about 3-4 years ago. I was down at Yankee Fantasy Camp, and I knew that there has been a lot of books written about Thurman. And there are baseball books. They're really not a book about what type of person he was actually, what type of person he was off the field. Everybody knew he was very, very tough. Everybody knew he was very, very, when he got on the field, he was always, never shaved, always had, you know, ruffle type of, a uniform, always dirty, but everybody always thought about him as a person that always liked to chop your head off. But then I was down at Yankee Fantasy Camp, and I knew from a lot of people that have written books about him that they always asked to have Diana to write the foreword of their book. And Diana was down there with Helen Hunter and Kay Mercer. Of course, Helen was Catfish's wife, and Kay Mercer was Bobby Mercer's wife, okay? So I was so close to Diana, so I went up and I looked at her, and I had I said to myself, I'm going to ask her, because I was that close. And I went up to her and we're talking, and I said, Diana, I want to ask you something. You can always tell me no if you wanted to. And I said, Diana, I'm thinking about writing a book about Thurman. And she said, okay. And I said, I would like for you to do the foreword of the book. And she looked at me, she started crying. And she said, I would love to write the foreword of the book, because I knew that you would tell the real story about my husband and what type of person he was off the field and what type of human being he was. And one reason why I'm writing it, I want Thurman where he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
You show a side I found really interesting in the book of both Thurman Munson and in your career where he stuck up for you at some difficult times. And what I learned, it seems like Thurman's persona in public and with the reporters and even on the field and how he acted with his friends in the clubhouse were two different things, right?
Oh, absolutely. I would tell you right now that he did not like writers. Only writers that he would get along with were actually the beat writers that followed the Yankees at all time, like Dick Young, Phil Pepe, Maury Allen, people like that. But if you are actually a rookie writer from New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and, you know, living and playing in New York, you just don't get covered by 1, 2, 3 papers. You get covered by 50, 60 papers. And there was always, new writers used to come in, and they were scared to death of Thurman because they knew his reputation, and he would bite your head off. He would absolutely destroy you. And I was like three lockers away from Thurman, and Bobby Mercer was actually one locker away from Thurman. And we knew after any type of ball game, even if Thurman had a great ball game, we knew that there were going to be some yelling and some different types of words that would be said. And I mean, it was a great sight, Ian. But in the clubhouse, Thurman was the captain. Thurman was once he got to the ballpark, he was a very aggressive athlete, very competitive athlete, and a guy that did not take any nonsense from anybody. I mean, really anybody. And so after, you know, once he's off the field, after the game is over with, he's a total different type of person. We used to do the Shriners telethon. We used to do the Jerry Lewis telethon. And he would go up to the kids that are sick and would just hug them and, you know, just love them. And that's the type of person he was with his family. But, you know, I mean, but on the field, I mean, he was a piranha. He was a tough guy, but I loved him. He was a brother of mine, and he took great care of me. And here's another thing. Unfortunately, when I played, Ian, I got injured quite a bit. And my last couple of years with the Yankees, basically I missed two seasons. Knees and my shoulder. And actually, when I used to come into the clubhouse to get therapy, there was a few rumblings that, you know, stay away from this guy. This guy is jinxed, just like little things. But once Thurman heard about that, he actually got into their face and said, "Don't you ever say anything about this guy." This guy hurt his shoulder in Milwaukee, hit a home run, and it took actually a year to come back. Then I ran into a wall in spring training. 4 days we were supposed to break camp. And, I was out for 2 years, but he stuck up for me. He was my brother. And he was a wonderful guy. He was a great teammate, a great family man. And we did everything on and off the field together.
You say in the book that you had never seen anybody get the ball out of the catcher's mitt and to throw down to second on a steal as fast as Thurman Munson did. Athletically speaking, what made him so much different from his fellow catchers of that era?
Well, you know, people always talked about Johnny Bench and Carlton Fisk. And they always said that Johnny Bench was better and Carlton Fisk was better. But there was no better, I'm just telling you now, there was no better catcher in that era than Thurman Munson. Thurman Munson maybe didn't hit as many home runs as Johnny Bench did, but he wasn't that type of hitter. But he had a better batting average. I drove in more runs, more important runs. He was more important, to his pitching staff. He was extremely dominating with his pitchers. He was just, when he used to catch, he didn't have the strongest arm in the world, but he had the quickest release in the game of baseball. And it looked like the ball, when the pitcher used to throw, didn't even hit his glove. And, you know, when he threw down to second base, he threw over the top. He threw sidearm. He threw submarine. I mean, he was just a natural leader. He was just a natural catcher. And he was the best with his pitching staff you can ever find. Plus, he was our team captain. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm doing everything I possibly can to get him in.
Yeah, you know, he's at this era now where he wasn't voted into the Hall of Fame here in Cooperstown on the actual writer's ballot over that 15-year period at the time. So now it would take a vote by the Veterans Committee for him to be added to the Hall of Fame. I guess the other side of the argument is that, you know, he didn't play long enough because he died so young. Why do you think he belongs in?
Oh, absolutely. Because what he did for that era, you look at Bill Mazeroski. You know, Bill Mazeroski hit one home run and they got him in. I mean, he was a great ball player, a great, a great shortstop. But, you know, but nobody did what Thurman did. Thurman took a team that was the biggest baseball media in the game of athletics, New York City. Took the team where CBS owned the Yankees, and then George Steinbrenner came in to bring the Yankees back, okay? Here's a guy that had 25 guys on that team, different characters. And that's why they called us the Bronx Zoo. But he took these guys and put them in their place. He took these guys and led these guys to greatness. And, you know, he had almost 10 years. But those 10 years, you know, you had Sandy Koufax. Sandy Koufax, I think he had four or five great years. But Thurman had X amount of great years also. And what he did for the Yankees and what he did for baseball and what he did for New York City, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. The reason why he's not, and I spoke to a couple of writers, because of his attitude and his disposition with a lot of writers. Because a lot of writers, you know, I mean, hey, let's just be honest. You know, it was a club, it was a clique. And, you know, if they didn't like you, you know, you don't get in the Hall of Fame. So what I'm trying to do now, because now there's all new writers, there's all new veterans. And what I'm doing now is trying to show the veterans, the committee, the executives of baseball, what type of guy, because they knew of him. But a lot of these new owners and a lot of these new veterans that are writers really actually never saw him play. So what I'm trying to do now is to show what type of person, the human interest, the type of person he was off the field. But on the field, hey, you know, I mean, he was a very aggressive, great ball player that led the Yankees to greatness. And, you know, I mean, there's two sides of an athlete. There's one on the field and one off the field. And I'm showing, trying to show him what type of wholeness that he actually has as a ball player.
If you don't mind my asking, I think many Yankee fans who have gone to Yankee Stadium over the years remember seeing Thurman Munson's locker, which was left, you know, as it was when he died, and they've kept it intact all of these years, which it, you know, gets a lump in your throat as a fan. But you spent time, obviously, as a teammate and a friend of Thurman Munson's. When you see that locker, what do you think?
To be honest with you, that's the cleanest I've ever seen his uniform. you know, I look at his uniform and I'm looking at it and I said, that's the neatest I've ever seen his the locker. That's the cleanest I've ever seen his uniform. And it brings back, you know what, every time I see it, it brings back tears because, I mean, he was such a good friend, because when I signed in 1967 as a number one draft pick, he signed the number one draft pick in 68, and we became very, very close in 69. And to that day, when he came into the clubhouse and to put on his uniform and he came back off the field, he was the dirtiest guy you have ever seen. And I tell you now that I've seen him many, many times where he never shaved. I have seen him many, many times where, during a ball game, he's the dirtiest. Sometimes he wouldn't ever take a shower. You know, he would go home in his, I'd take off his uniform, of course, but he would never take a shower. And sometimes I would see him come in with the same clothes to the next game, to the next day. And, you know, looking at that locker, that's the cleanest I've ever seen it. And, but hey, It reminds me of him. It reminds me, you know, I love him as a brother. He was a brother to me. And he's a guy that really, really did a lot for me in the game of baseball.
We're speaking with Ron Bloomberg, and his new book is The Captain and Me, On and Off the Field with Thurman Munson. You were a Jewish baseball player raised in the South, which is a really unusual background, and you really didn't want to play for anybody other than the Yankees. You thought about other sports if the draft didn't work out that way. Why were you so set on coming to New York?
Oh, it's very, very simple. Being Jewish, living down South, growing up with the KKKs, and I'm a major minority. Get a chance to go up to New York City, where all my people were. You know, going up to New York and doing commercials for all the delicatessens up there and all the Jews up there. There's 8 million Jews up in New York City. That was a no-brainer to me. I signed a basketball scholarship in 67 to play at UCLA. And I signed a football scholarship to University of Alabama with Bear Bryant. And if I did not have an opportunity to get drafted number one by the Yankees, I would have probably gone to I would have played something else. That was the only city that I would have, to be honest with you, I would ever play in. New York, the fans were the greatest fans in the world. The people took great care of me up there, even to this day. It's wonderful. I mean, it's the greatest city in the world. Whenever I had the opportunity to do something what I wanted to do, Ian, I got to play up in New York, got to put on the Yankee pinstripes, and got to play in Yankee Stadium, and got to eat at all the great finest restaurants and shows on Broadway. What more? What more could you ask? And the fans up there was just unbelievable. And I think during the off season, I think I lit more candles at every bar mitzvah and every wedding. And that was my second job, because back then we made no money. And that was my second job, was to be related to every Jew in New York City. And to this day, I'm still related to 8 million Jews.
You actually write about in the book kind of the stress it put on you to know that you were going to be on a 1-year contract. You know, this the age of the 10-year deal was many years out when you were playing.
Oh, Ian, people don't realize back then when we played, we had 1-year contracts. We didn't have these 3, 4, 5, 6, 10-year contracts. You had to perform every single day. You had to perform every single year. I remember in 73, I hit 329, and they gave me a $500 raise. The next year, I hit 311. They took my $500 back. And then next year, I hit 301. They didn't even talk about a raise to me. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't easy. You know, I mean, you had to perform every single year. If you didn't perform, you get sent down to the minor leagues. Realistically, let's be honest, you're never going to come back. You're never going to come up to the big leagues. And, you know, you had to perform. And, you know, hey, I would love the, my era when I played baseball, to me, it was great baseball. Nowadays, I watch the game, watch the games all the time. I'm up in New York. Unfortunately, for the last a little bit over a year, we could not go up to New York. To do a lot of stuff with the Steinbrenners and do a lot of meet and greets up there. But I watch them on TV. And the game of baseball, I mean, has changed so much. It's analytics now. It's not the game of baseball that I'm used to. They have a runner on second base on extra innings. They think about moving the mound back a foot. It's all robotics now. The players, they play 2 games and then they take off 2 days. We had to play. It's a home run or a strikeout now. It's no first and third. no bunny now. It's no steals anymore. You know, it's you can't slide into second base. You can't slide at home. The pitchers can't come in close to you. I mean, it's a total different game. It was, you know, to be honest with you, it had been very, very difficult for me to play this type of game. But a lot of fans like it. A lot of fans like to watch the players flip up a bat 25 feet up in the air, see how far the home runs go. Hey, I would just tell people, just put the ball on the tee. Just hit the ball off the tee, see how far you can hit it. So, hey, that'd be easy. But it's a total game. It's a total change game. But I'm very, very happy to play when I did and play in the greatest city in the world and put on that Yankee pinstripe.
So last question, you are forever going to be the answer to a trivia question, which is who is the first designated hitter? And it's a fascinating story. It happened by chance that you ended up being the first DH. What do you make of the evolution of that position almost 50 years on?
I tell you right now, I screwed up the game of baseball in 73, but I am so proud and I'm so happy of it because 50% of the people hate it. 50% of the people love it. And let me tell you something, Ian, it's 48 years. The National League and baseball cannot come up with a solution about having the universal DH. This is crazy. They put all these other rules in. It took 6 months to make a decision. Now it's taken 48 years. And it looks like they're going to have eventually the DH universally next year. They had it last year. I thought it worked extremely well. The managers loved it. The players loved it. You had Edgar Martinez was the first DH that made the Hall of Fame. It looks like David Ortiz is going to be the second guy to make the Hall of Fame. It's great for the game of baseball. People love it. And I love it. And they need to have it in. And like I told you before, I screwed it up, but I'm very, very proud of it. They can never, ever take it away from me. And my first book was designated Hebrew, and that did extremely well also. And that's selling now too. So, I mean, I don't know if they feel bad for me because I had 1 year contracts or they feel bad because, they just feel bad for me, but it's been really fun, Ian. It's been fun. It's a great ride, and I'm very, very happy to be part of baseball forever and ever and ever.
Ron Bloomberg is the author of the new book, The Captain and Me, On and Off the Field with Thurman Munson. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you so much for taking this time for us, and I hope you get back up to Yankee Stadium sometime soon.
Ian, thank you very much. Hopefully we can meet someday. I wish you the best of luck. Be safe. Have a great rest of the season. Go Yankees.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.